Welcome to Morph Into a New You, part of MHNRnetwork.com. Your host, Johnny Calloway, is the author of several books, including Taming the Dragon, Dragons to Butterflies, The Metamorphosis of a Man, and The Bridge. He will be having conversations with people from all walks of life. Healing really is an inside job that transforms you to become a better version of you. We must change our self-talk and inner dialogue so we can start to believe. A special thanks to our sponsor, Meaningful Expressions, at m-expressions.com. They can take a concept, thought, or personal brand and turn it into a visual masterpiece that you can use to raise awareness about your passion or cause. They've certainly done that with our podcast website. And thank you for joining Johnny as you morph into a new you.
Hello, everybody. This is Johnny Calloway, host of Morph Into a New You, here with Mental Health News Radio Network. And we want to give a big shout out to Chris and Samantha Walker for providing the platform for us to have a voice. And the theme for the month of February for Morph Into a New You is healing is an inside job. Today, we have with us my dear friend, Aaron Huey. He's the founder and director of Fire Mountain Programs in, what's the town, Aaron? Where you are?
Estes Park, Colorado.
Estes Park, Colorado. Glad I had him there to back me up. So we're going to, Aaron deals predominantly with adolescents, and we're going to talk about how healing is an inside job for them and how we get hope to those that think they're hopeless. How you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing great, Johnny. Thank you so much. I love talking to you. I love your show. And you were a big inspiration for me getting into the podcast business, is being on your show the first time and having you as the guest on my first show. And you got me off and running, brother. And I really appreciate you and appreciate your work and you being a guiding light for people like me to try to reach more people. So thank you. And thanks for having me on.
Well, whatever I did, I'm glad I could help. So, first off, let me say, I've been warned by the sound editors that when I talk to you, I get excited, and I'll either end up pounding the table or clapping my hands, and the sound editors are not liking that. So, I may have to stop myself a time or two, because whenever I talk to you, I end up getting excited about the topics that we do. So, I'll try to restrain from pounding my table.
I got my hands folded under my arms, so...
Okay, Aaron, tell us a little about your facility and what the healing process is for the kids there.
Great. Yeah. So we started Fire Mountain Programs back in 2004, and my wife and I ran kids camps and teen rite of passage programs. And around 2009, it morphed into a treatment center for boys. That morphed into a treatment center for boys and girls. Currently have a facility up in Estes Park, Colorado, in a beautiful, beautiful Rocky Mountains on 40 acres. And we have some of the highest success rate that we can find in the United States. And I'm excited to talk about this project that you got going for February. Healing is an inside job, because it is definitely our approach. We are a full residential treatment center. Boys and girls is ages 12 to 17 years old. These are kids who are struggling with drugs, alcohol, self-harm, depression, anxiety, mental health issues. We are a dual diagnosis facility, so we have medical doctors and therapists and a psychiatrist who oversees the program, clinical director. It is a one-stop shop for a treatment program for children, and we are a four-month minimum program. We are also an accredited school. That's our newest addition, is that we did get our accreditation, and so we are also a middle school and a high school, and it's called affectionately Fire Mountain Academy. So that's the nuts and bolts of who we are and how I've come to be able to understand this topic, working through the years with adolescents and the professionals who really, really have the information and the knowledge to create a deep healing.
Oh, that's incredible. I love what you do. I fell in love with what you do when I first met you out at the Addictions Academy thing that we did in Littleton, Colorado.
Yeah, Littleton. Rob Lohman's event.
Yes. So anyway, I fell in love with what you do there. It was funny. I was standing outside of where you were speaking, and I could hear you all the way outside. And I remember, I don't know what that guy's talking about, but I got to go hear it. And I went in and I sat down, and you just fired me up. So I love that.
I appreciate that. I do have a side gig. I do travel all over the world speaking. I speak at adult seminars and I lecture a lot on the archetypal psychology and primarily in other countries on the warrior archetype, a cultural warrior concept and archetype. So I do travel a lot and I talk even more than I travel. I'm a good talker,
John. Well, some of us just have that knack.
The gab.
Okay, so let's say I'm a 14-year-old boy. I've just come into your facility. I'm dealing with, let's say I'm got some post-traumatic stress going on and trying in an attempt to self-medicate that. Let's say I've gotten off into some drugs and I'm just trying to keep myself sane. But I've come into your system and I'm sitting with you. What are you going to say to me in the beginning?
You know, that's a great question, because in the beginning, it wouldn't matter what I say to you. I could be talking about boiled broccoli or the science and chemistry of your brain or hope and courage for the future. And none of it's going to matter, because if 9 times out of 10, when the kids are coming into the facility, they're in limbic system. They're in the lowest part of their brain. Their prefrontal cortex is offline. Blood is not flowing properly to the human part of the brain. It's in the extremities. Their brain is in what we affectionately call lizard mode, which means that they're in fight, flight, freeze, faint, fornicate, and feed. We call them the 6 F's of living like a lizard. And these, it's survival mode. So I can't really say much in that moment, but what I can be is I can be what we call the warm rock. I can be very conscious. I can be very present with you. I can be very understanding. I can be connected to a deep energy source like a warm rock is. It's either plugged into the wall in your lizard's cage or it's in direct line of sight of the sun, and both are deep energy sources. And I can be that thing, that person, place, or thing that you can find comfort and relaxation in, because my system's online. I have regulated my nervous system. I do not expect any child who comes into my facility for the first month to have a really good regulated nervous system. So words are not really going to do much. What is going to do the most is me being totally regulated and allowing you to just be in the zone of regulation. And when you're not in the zone of regulation, I remain there and I remain constant and present with you so that you have a warm rock to come back to as you try to skate sideways back into survival mode. You can't lecture the limbic system, that low part, that lizard brain, the survival brain. And that's what is going on when someone's in PTSD. They're in their limbic brain.
Wow. You used a couple words there that are, I know, as someone that's recovering from all those things, recovered, I don't want to get into that. But the whole thing of like 2 words you used that are very important to me, that I think are very important to anybody in that place, and that is connected and constant. Because yeah. I know for me, constant is powerful. When somebody is constantly the same way, almost started patting the table there, when that continuity is powerful. And when you know you can count, like count on, well, Aaron said he's going to be here and then he's there. That means everything, because what connection does, in my understanding and in my experience, is it opens up the door for hope.
You know, this starts at a very early age, to start your kids training them on constant and connection. And the continuity, when we suddenly change our child's environment, okay, and this is why children who grow up in an abusive household or a household with addiction or a household with an abandonment, one of the primary things that takes place is that there is not a constant. Or the constant is pain, suffering, fear, until the nervous system just goes, I'm offline. I'm done. It's sink or swim, kiddo. Fight, flight, freeze, faint, fornicate, and feed. Those are the only things you are able to do to get through this world. When kids come into our facility, they can see the weekly schedule posted up onto the wall, and it does not change. If it's going to change for any reason, because there's a holiday coming up, because there's a pass coming up, this is something that comes in weeks in advance. When I go in to teach a class, these kids know that I'm coming any day of the week. They know exactly what time, because it's posted on the wall. But See, the brain looks for patterns. The brain looks for the constant. The brain looks for this thing that it can depend on. And the problem with growing up in an abusive, an addictive, or an abandoned environment is that the constant becomes that suffering. And so when you talk about hope, when I got a 14-year-old kid who walks in the facility, and he's like, this is all shit. Life's all shit. You know, convince me different. That's all they've seen. Their brain has said, okay, well, this is it. I mean, this is as good as it gets, kiddo. So no wonder they're suicidal. No wonder they're depressed. No wonder they have anxiety when they're waiting for a parent to come home drunk or not drunk, so they don't know if they're going to get a whooping or not. That's what creates fight, flight, freeze, or faint, is constantly saying, I'm a lizard on a rock, and the bird of prey is circling. And that bird of prey is abandonment. It's addiction. It's abuse. And so what do kids turn to? They turn to constant. They turn to groups of friends. They turn to a drug. Well, why would they make a bad choice and use drugs when life is already that bad? And this is where it gets me. Choice? Are you joking me? Listen, let me tell you very closely, folks. When I was high, when I was a user, when I was high, I was happy. And when I was sober, I was sad. So let's talk about choice. Because my life as a child had abandonment, had bullying, had low self-esteem, very little self-concept. But when I used, I was happy. Sounds like a smart choice to me is to be happy. So when we're asking kids to make better choices, we need to actually check the environment or check the neurological environment before we start talking about choices. So again, boiled broccoli or brain chemistry or the future of hope. It doesn't matter in the first month of recovery. What matters is constant, regulated nervous systems that a child can depend on so they get a new model of being and a new place to land when they're going a little nuts.
I love that. I loved everything you said there. In my show with Dr. Eric Gentry, he talked about the traumatized child, and he said they're robbed of hope. When a child is traumatized, they're robbed of hope. And from that point forward, everything, every stimulant that they encounter becomes fear-based, and they react with fight or flight, just like you were saying, fight or flight. I'm out of here or I'm killing you. To come into a facility such as yours, and then I can't help but relate back to my own experience, hope was frightening to me, because every time I had hope, I got kicked in the ass for it. And my dad even taught me not to dream for better. He purposely taught me that. Now, later in life, I discovered that he did that because in his world, his hoping always ended up in disappointment. So in a weird way, he was trying to love me and save me the pain of disappointment.
You know, I've got a kid right now in the facility who I adore. We all love him. And we're working through a process with him for him to finally be able to graduate. Now, he's had the capability to graduate for a long time now. He's plenty smart enough. He cleaned up. He did everything he was supposed to do months and months ago, but then he stalled out on his work on purpose, saying, I don't want to leave. I'm safe here. I'm happy here. I've got friends here. I'm in an environment here that I can trust. It's constant. Now, this kid is a product of three failed adoptions. So he has major reactive attachment disorder. The danger that we face as a facility, that we've provided this loving environment for him to heal, of course he doesn't want to leave, right? It took him 4 months to be able to hear the words, hey, I really like you, and not have a freak out. Now, you would think that a kid who's had three failed adoptions and the family he's currently with is literally saying, I don't know if we can keep him, but we don't want to be the fourth. So he comes to a place and people are saying, I really dig you. I really like you. I want to hang out with you. And the first thing he would do is completely shut down. Well, why would a kid choose to shut down when he finally has some people to hang out with? Well, because all he's ever experienced in his life are the people who are supposed to love him and supposed to provide an environment for him have given him away. Maybe because of his behaviors, maybe because of life circumstances, maybe because of abuse or addiction, but it has all turned into an abandonment issue that literally tells his nervous system, listen, the words I love you mean that you're going to end up alone. That's what it means, because that's his evidence. So now he's finally come to us and said, I don't want to go home. This is the place I want to be. And we said, that's not healthy. Our job is to teach you how to transition so that the home you've created here at Fire Mountain goes with you. So he and his family and Fire Mountain all are working together to help him make a powerful transition back to his family, who has now said, yes, we can do this. Now that he's done his work and we've done our work, we can give this another go. That's how the brain works. It's really, for all the complexities, that's the simple nature. You said it, Johnny, earlier when you said, you know, fight or flight. I'm going to fight you or I'm going to run away from you. I'm even saying that when you first walk into an environment, your Neanderthal brain is literally looking around saying, either you're going to eat me or I'm going to eat you. And if you're going to eat me, then I got two choices. I got to fight you or I got to run.
Right.
And if I'm going to eat you, you've got two choices. And that's a very, very base human limbic system, which means that's how animals live and that's how reptiles live. It's the prefrontal cortex that allows us to have the abstract thought. It's the prefrontal cortex that, okay, can I transition into the inner game piece? Can I tell you how we teach the inner game to teens?
Go ahead.
Okay, so this is the inner game piece for teens. We have four parts to our program that help build hope. When a teenager comes in, they have very little hope. They're totally in survival. Not much happens in the first month. 30-day programs with adolescents do not work. It's 2% of the time they show some sort of success. So we have what we call the four pillars. The first one is called Mind the Gap. The entire time a child is in our program or with us, we are teaching them a concept called Mind the Gap. And that is the gap between the feeling and the action. Now, developmentally, children do not possess that ability. That's why they look compulsive. They're suddenly angry, so they kick mom in the shin. They're suddenly scared, so they scream and run into the other room. Adults are supposed to have access to a gap in between the feeling and the emotion. Hey, my boss yelled at me and called me a name. I want to quit my job, but I have bills to pay. I could have handled myself a little bit better. He's had a really crappy day. I already know this. And the company's struggling right now. Maybe I should go start a conversation with my boss and try to talk this out. You see, that's the gap. That's us considering between the feeling, I'm angry, and the action, I punch somebody in the face. It's, I'm angry, I want to punch him in the face, but I don't want to go to jail. So we teach kids about the gap, and that is a neurological process of development. So that's the first thing that allows them to have hope. A girl came up to me and she said, I'm really frustrated. My therapist won't take me off a 5-foot rule with one of the boys and stuff like that. And I said, what's really impressive to us is that you're walking up to me saying, I'm really frustrated. And you're not acting out. You're talking about it. Your therapist has seen that. She came up to me later and she said, I got my graduation date. I know when I'm going home. And it's because of how I'm handling myself. That's the gap, right? The second piece, the second pillar is real life school. Everything we teach in our school, we require that it has to apply to the real world. I don't live in Canada and I don't know what the provinces are. I know I got taught them in high school and I have one of my best friends who's Canadian living in my house right now, but I still don't know what they are. But I do know how to balance a budget. I do know how to manage these finances. I do know how to do the things that affect me on a daily basis. This is what our school, when a child understands because of their schooling, how to live on their own and how to grocery shop and not get sucked into the psychological tricks that grocery stores use to make you buy more, they start to feel hope. They start to feel like they can handle things. The other thing is, the third pillar is tribe. Everything's a community. You talked about isolation. You and I talk about isolation all the time. Tribe and community, having people you can depend on, friends you can count on, and a place to go when you are feeling no hope, where you can go there with no hope and they got enough hope to share with you. So the tribe piece is very important. The community piece is very important. The fourth part of the inner game, the fourth pillar of this inner game, and for me, it is the most important because I don't think the other three can happen without it. And that is physiology first. If your body is not engaged in the process of hope, in the process of recovering from depression, in the process of recovering from anxiety, healing is a physiological experience. You can sit on a therapist's couch for 10 years talking about a problem. But if you're exercising and you're eating healthy food and you are moving that body, I can guarantee you can cut that time in half because your body's engaged in it. I want to say it again. Healing is a physiological experience. Our kids at this facility exercise every day before the day starts, before my day starts, before I do my day timer, before I drink my coffee or have my breakfast. I am at the gym because I need the energy of an athlete to do the work that I do. And if I try to do this without, I am burning the candle at five ends. And I swear there's only two.
You said so much there. I mean, it'd be really difficult for me to touch on all that I want to with that. But there is one word that you used that really resonated for me, and that is when you spoke of evidence. In my way of thinking, the mind is an evidence-seeking machine.
Yes.
And I know for myself, looking back on my life, I grew up thinking everybody that said they loved me was about to screw me, period. So what I ended up doing with that is I screwed them before they got a chance. You said you loved me. You were about to lose something. Unfortunately, because of that, and my mind being an evidence-seeking machine, I look for people to do that. And in looking for that, I'm going to find that. To the point that when I come across someone that is not giving me any real evidence that that's true, I'm still looking for it, and I'll make it where I can see it so I can justify my fight or flight.
Isn't that an incredible psychological statement there? Anybody who said they loved you, you knew was going to screw you. So number one, you screwed them first. Number two, you began to look for people to screw them over. What that tells me, if I was working with you, I would say, Johnny, don't you hear yourself saying that you are looking for love? That no matter what happened back there, if you are actively looking for someone to hustle, because that is what you do, that's just you looking for love. If the people who loved you hustled you and you're beginning to hustle other people, that still tells me you're looking for love because you've connected love and hustling together. That is the evidence that you need to get started with a child, with an adult, or with yourself, is to listen to that story and look at the pieces they connected. It is no mystery to me that the divine figure that I have connected with the most in worship is an absent God, very much a creator God, very much a father figure God, very much a all-knowing, all-seeing, but he is on his own path. He is not standing over me, watching me, guiding me. I don't pray to him like he's going to answer. In fact, I feel like he grows from my struggles and my experiences. And this is a very particular faith. But when I look at all the faiths and what the father figure of God provides, it's not lost on me that I've chosen one that sometimes feels like he's abandoned me because my biological father abandoned me. So, of course, I'm going to find relationships that are going to reconcile the primary pain that I suffered. The mess is the message that we are looking to receive. So you say you were looking for people to screw over and you sought them out. I say you were looking for people to love. And that was the only way you knew how to connect with them, because that's how the people who loved you connected with you.
Well, today I'm totally on board with that whole thought process. Today, I am totally on board with that whole process there. Let me emphasize, today I am. But it took a lot of people such as yourself stepping into my life and offering me hope. Sure. And then not going away once they offered it. Because,
right.
You know, I had to learn. And it was definitely a learning process that some people can be trusted. Some people aren't out to get me. The whole learning of like, okay, man, I had a brother-in-law take me into his house at one point. I think I was 15 years old. The man really tried to be a father figure to me. I adored him. And he taught me how to shoot a bow and arrow. He taught me how to work on drywall. He taught me how to paint. He spent time with me, but I didn't have a mind that could receive that at the time. I was constantly looking for the other shoe to drop. And no matter what I did with him, it never dropped.
That's PTSD. When you say, what do you say to a kid that walks into your facility who's got trauma, PTSD from trauma, they've been self-medicating and they have no hope? What could you say? What could you possibly say to them to convince them that their whole life has been a lie, that that's not how the world works, when all the evidence they have is that that's exactly how the world works and they can prove it to you?
Right.
You could say, listen, weed is bad. And I could say to you, without it, life is bad.
Right.
And it took a long time for me to be able to see life on life's terms, not just Aaron's terms. So when you're talking time in, that's the key.
This reminds me of one of my situations again, because I had to work, as you know, a lot to get to where I am today. But one of my Healing Your Inner Child workshops I went through this major healing process about something my dad had done. And when I was done, the facilitator said, you don't even know why you're angry with your dad. I'm tying this into what you said. I said, of course I do. And I started rattling off all the stories about the crap that had happened in my childhood. He said, that's not why you're mad with your dad. I said, okay, asshole, why am I mad with my dad? He said, because he wouldn't let you love him.
Oof.
That put me on my knees, man. Because all my childhood, all I ever wanted to do was love my dad and for him to love me. It had nothing to do with all the stories. It was all about, I wanted that love that you were talking about. And all that I got from him, I perceived as being love. So that's what I was looking for, as you were saying, from everybody else with this stuff. It was incredible. But yeah, he wouldn't let you love him. And it put me on my knees.
And I finally began to have atonement with my father. And that's part of the hero's journey, right? Is at one-ment, atonement with the father figure. Even Luke Skywalker forgave his dad. And his dad was like driving the universe into the shitter. When I sat down at the computer, I had found my dad's email address on a website from his alma mater, Denver University. And I sat down and I wrote him an email and I just said, dude, I'm here and I made it and I'm successful and I'm happy and I'm married and I'm a father and I'm a good father. And I needed to make this statement to just say to you, I did it. Do what you want with this, but I did it. Never heard back from him, not for a couple months. When all of a sudden I got a phone call, I had just flown in from Malaysia and I had gotten a phone call from a man who said, hi, I'm your uncle that you've never met. Your father's died. And the idea of not being able to have true reconciliation face to face, eye to eye, man to man with him, put me on my knees. That all those years of not having support, I could not move the next day until I had gone to the chiropractor and they put me back into place. But here was that thing that now I can accept. The moment he was dead and I couldn't talk to him, he was everywhere and I could say whatever I needed to him and I could hear his voice, because it was no longer waiting for him to show up. He was in my heart. He was on my mind and he was in my sphere, in my universal galactic boulder, new age, woo woo, total weirdo sphere of spirituality. And I could speak with him and I could hear him tell me he's sorry and all those types of things. And I could sing him the angry heavy metal song from Pantera saying, you'll never be the father I am, the bastard father to the thousands. And we reconcile it. But that's the inner game, right? The body heals from the inside out, not the outside in. And I really want people to think about that, because when Johnny is saying it's an inner game, this healing is an inner game. It doesn't matter whether it's an emotional cut, a mental wound, or a paper cut. The healing comes from the inside. The Band-Aid doesn't heal you. The Band-Aid protects the cut while your body is healing you. And if you don't let your body do the work, if you don't make your body do the work from the inside out, starting with the heart, starting with the thoughts, starting with the body, it ain't going to heal. You're going to continually pick this scab and scream at the sky and say, why am I not healing?
You know, I'm going to tie this back into my butterfly thing. You know, me and the butterflies, Aaron. The butterfly becomes the butterfly within the cocoon, within the chrysalis. Not outside. It doesn't just park on some plant somewhere and all of a sudden it's a butterfly. And I've often thought of what goes on in that chrysalis, because that is one ugly worm that typically crawls into that chrysalis. And it comes out this beautiful butterfly. I think of that as us when we are going through our healing process, because there's stuff going on within us that we can't see. Our friends can't see it. But all of a sudden, this guy who was reacting in fight or flight with everything that he encountered, all of a sudden has responded to something with an act of kindness. That's the butterfly. That happens within. We don't get to see it. We don't know when it happens. I will never forget one time after an AA meeting, actually, this kid comes running up to my sponsor. We're standing there talking, and this kid comes running up to my sponsor, and he said, "Hey, Gerald, how long have you been sober?" And Gerald said, "I got no damned idea." And the kid said, "What do you mean you don't know?" Gerald said, "I can tell you how long I've been without a drink." He said, "But I can't tell you how long I've been sober, because that is not an event. Sobriety is a state of mind." He said, "I don't know when that happened." I thought, oh my God, how cool is that? Because we don't know. I can't tell you the moment that I became a new man. I can tell you when I began that journey, or at least when I think I did. As I say that, I think, you know what? That journey probably started long before I thought it did. Who knows? Maybe part of the fall was part of learning how to get up. You know, and you were talking about all that woo-woo stuff and all of that. I live in that space, man. Frequently, when I'm sitting here by myself watching TV and I flip through one of the channels and John Wayne is on, all of a sudden my dad is on the couch with me. And we're watching John Wayne together, or Clint Eastwood, or any of, quote unquote, as they call them, our guys. They always called Humphrey Bogart, Jimmy Cagney, all those badasses were our guys. But he is with me. I believe that. My mom is with me. I can draw on their love anytime I want. And today I know my dad loved me. I just know he was a wounded soul himself and had no idea how to show it. And that's part of how I forgive me, is I realize without being blessed with finding help, I had no idea how to show or receive love. We're all pretty much on the same game. Some of us are just fortunate enough to find a path.
You know, that path, that higher power path, that's a sticking point for a lot of people in recovery, especially teenagers. A majority of teenagers are not one for spirituality, religion. They tend to be in the space of rejecting their family's religious choices or callings. We're not a religious facility. We do a lot of rituals and ceremonies, and they're very all-inclusive, but we do not teach children about religious things, regardless of the path, you know, Jewish, Christian, Muslim, Buddhist. The concept of higher power, whether it's you sitting on the couch with your dad watching John Wayne, whether it's, you know, me and my connection to an absent father figure, God, who one day will be proud of me, or whether it's a daily connection to Christ or a philosophy like Taoism, a higher power simply means there's something going on that's bigger and more powerful than you, that you can count on. And when people have been abandoned, abused, and traumatized and are dealing with addiction issues, it's, once again, you come back to the evidence that this higher power has failed you, right? That you truly are alone. You are terminally unique. Not even God wants you. I had a kid on my podcast, Beyond Risk and Back, say to me the other day, "Why would I be a doctor when I'm a piece of shit addict?" And this kid is brilliant enough, and his compassion is enough to be a doctor. And what a powerful statement. What is it about me that God would like? Have you met me? Now you're telling me I should call to him or her or them or it to save me, to give my power over to it? When I was a child and I had no power, my assumption is they did, and look at what they allowed. So if it's not that version of spirituality or divinity, all higher power means is something bigger on this planet than your own ass. Something that you can focus on that doesn't just bring the concept right back to you. Something galactic, something universal, something worldly. That young boy says it's nature for him. He feels stress. He wants to smoke crack. He goes outside and gets into a canoe and gets as far away from the shore as he can because there's no crack there. And that's where the waves kind of toss him around, and he can feel something more powerful than him, the ocean. And right now, the ocean is his higher power. And that's what I tell people to look for. Don't look for a person in the sky. Maybe they're there, maybe they're not. I know what I believe. Look for something bigger than you and call that a higher power. If it's another person, well, good luck with that. That may or may not work, but bigger than you.
I love that. Yeah, it's like you said, it's just a higher power. I have my own beliefs. I don't push them on anybody ever. I'll sure as hell share my thoughts and beliefs. That's why I do the podcast. But I love when we have these conversations, Aaron. It looks like we're about to run out of time. So I'm going to ask if you'll tell everybody how to reach you. Definitely want you to bring up your podcast. Tell everybody how to find Aaron Huey.
The best way, folks, is just on Facebook. I'm there. You can just look up Aaron Huey. You can go to at Beyond Risk and Back. That's the podcast. I, like Johnny, am very grateful of our boss goddess, Kristen Walker. She has provided a platform for yappers like Johnny and I to get out there and tell our story 1,000 times and hope that one person listens. And I think we're both enjoying a lot more than one person listening, and that's awesome. At Beyond Risk and Back is the Facebook page. You can also find me on Aaron Huey. And if you are looking for treatment for a child, firemountainprograms.com is the website. You can also call us at 303-443-3343. And you want to speak to Jill at extension 204. I'll say the number again, because I know it sounds like a number that a woman gives you in a club when she doesn't want to give you a real number, but it's 303-443-3343, extension 204. That's Jill. She is our family liaison. She is our admissions personnel, and you want to talk with her directly.
Okay, everybody. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. This is Johnny at Morph Into a New You. You can find me at morphintoanewyou.com, or better yet, go to johnnycalloway.com and you can find out everything I'm up to. We're going to be taking our shows to YouTube soon, and hope to see you there. Thank you. Okay, everybody. Thanks for listening. Remember, never give up. Always keep it real and take time to smell the roses. And please sit down and watch a butterfly. Keep up with all that we are doing by going to morphintoanewyou.com. Thank you very much.